Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist, the 20th of May. I'm doing a marathon amount of podcasting, perhaps partly because I can, but also because there's a need, and also because things competing for me are just the parts from China have been misdelivered to other addresses, and they've said very sorry, but it's going to be weeks before I get them in. So, this is New Scientist, and I'm going to attempt to read it to you. The front cover is Teeny Tiny Universes, Mini Big Bangs Might Be Happening All the Time, Return to Jupiter, Mysteries of the Solar System, The Majestic Giant, Election Fallout, Truth About Lie Detectors, obviously. Can we use them? Okay, so reading here, there's a picture of a cannabis plant. Blind to the Truth is the editorial section. 9 days, 3 elections, a confusing mix of messages about what constitutes meaningful action on climate change. Start in Australia, where the ruling Liberal National Coalition won a surprise re-election last Saturday. Oh, you betcha. The result followed sustained question of the cost, the money and jobs, and opposition of the Labor Party's plans to clear that nearly doubled the planned cuts to carbon emissions. In India, meanwhile, the exit polls that New Scientist went to press suggest the world's largest democratic contest will have delivered another term to the Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Significantly, for the first time, the manifestos of both Modi's BJP party and the opposition's Congress party promised significant action on environmental issues, expanding renewables, reversing deforestation. Move to the European Parliament elections on the 23rd, 26th of May. They seem likely to deliver big gains for populist parties using climate change denial as part of their anti-establishment messaging, but also for pro-environmental Greens. New Scientist doesn't endorse any candidate or party, of course you don't, but we do endorse a sustainable future for the planet. And this week, the results fit a pattern. Nations on the up, such as India and China, see green issues that are compatible with their development, need advantageous, indeed advantageous for it. Meanwhile, graying Western economies are stuck on that, polarizing into pro and anti camps. The West should take heed. Dealing with the climate change comes with a cost, that is clear. Not making the necessary adjustments to our lifestyles comes with an even bigger cost. Nowhere is it clearer than in Australia, with the recent record extreme weather. The cognitive bias of hyperbolic discounting, which makes us favour a smaller reward sooner over a bigger one later, is well known. Pandering to it may bring short-term benefits, but longer-term, no one gains. Oh dear, news, and of course, Scott Morrison here. It was called the climate change election, but Australians' voters had other plans. Prime Minister Scott Morrison's shock win in the Australian federal election is bad news for climate action. While the left-wing-leaning Labor Party had promised emission cuts by 45% by 2005, levels of the next decade, Morrison's more conservative coalition plans about half that. It aims to do it with a $3.5 billion climate solutions package over 15 years. Some go to paying farmers and small businesses to reduce emissions, and some to big projects like the pump water projects to store energy that produce wind and solar. So it's just, they're going to spend that money anyway. They just sort of earmark it. So often you can see it. You add it up, and the one project which can have multiple labels sort of boosts what they're doing. The election was also another high-profile failure for the pollsters. For 2 years, polls put Labor ahead. Of the 16 polls held since the election was called last month, all went in favour of the Labor Party when the respondents were asked to pick from the leading two parties. Exit polls and betting sites also got it wrong, and sports bets set out to pay at least $5 million. Kevin Brohan, an analyst in Tasmania, says this was worse than a failure to predict Donald Trump's election in 2016. A single poll can be wrong, by a few percent because of random sample error. But Brougham says it is suspicious that all polling firms were repeatedly getting similar incorrect results. Quite vastly improbable that this would happen by random chance, he says, adding the polling companies might have engaged in statistical smoothing or herding or with figures because they want to avoid being embarrassed by having different results. Software. Google restricts how Huawei's use of Android. You know, Google's restricting Chinese smartphone maker Huawei's access to the Android operating system currently used on Huawei's phones. This is because the US President Donald Trump has placed Huawei on a blacklist of companies barring the US business with it. The Trump administration has previously implied that it thinks Huawei cannot be trusted because the Chinese state may use its developed products to hack US citizens. The result is that Huawei will have to provide a usable version of Android itself, relying on its own developers to update it. Owners of Huawei phones will still have access to Google's Play Store and some security protections, according to Google. However, third-party apps on the phones may soon have their access cut by Google services such as Maps. That would put consumers off buying Huawei phones, striking a big commercial blow to the company, which is second only to Samsung in smart market share worldwide. The decision may even force Huawei to develop and launch its own operating system. This isn't a direct attack on the growth of one of Huawei's core growing markets and could kill off their attractiveness outside China, says Andre Duarte at the University of Oxford. Google will also be hit by the decision. Cutting Huawei from Android hurts Google a lot, says Miko Helfand of cybersecurity firm F-Secure. 4 out of the 10 most sold smartphones in Europe last year were Huawei Android devices. So, yeah. Coming up, Cosmic Cacophony. And who writes this? Leah Crane. It's in the news. 10 to the 100 must be the cosmological constant. The solution to one of the biggest problems in physics may involve every point in space acting like a tiny exploding universe. The expansion of the universe is accelerating, and we aren't sure why. It may have something to do with quantum fluctuations that may make every point in space constantly grow and shrink, producing a rolling foam. On the whole, which is always expanding, perhaps. This is a complex solution to the vacuum catastrophe, which we didn't know about, which concerns one of the most hotly contested numbers in physics, the cosmological constant. The constant describes the energy stored in a vacuum of space. Most hypotheses predict the value for the constant to be up to 120 orders of magnitudes higher than that given by the actual observations of the universe expansion, which is SFA. Calculations are off by so much that it's been called the worst prediction in the history of physics. Yeah, I'd say so. Now, Qingdi Wang and William Earth of the University of British Columbia in Canada have come up with a hypothesis that could repair the catastrophe. A way to make the cosmological constant as low in theory as it seems in practice. Well, no, it is in practice. I mean, it's not as it is in practice. Calculation of the cosmological constant are partly based on one big assumption. The universe is, on large scales, the same everywhere you look. Wang and Urus hypothesis is based on the idea that even at, if this is true, bits of the universe will look different at the quantum scale. Picture sheet of paper, crumple it up, and then flatten it out again. If you go down to small scales, you can see creases where you crumpled it, says Steve Carl of the University of California, Davis. Quote, but if you look on average over the whole sheet of paper, it looks very nearly flat. In Wang and Durow's model, the vacuum energy is constantly fluctuating. Each point in space is expanding and contracting, acting like what they call a microcyclic universe. A cubic centimeter would contain 10 to the 10 of these universes, which are brought into existence with their own Big Bang, and then stuffed out after about 10 to the minus 40 seconds, which is like incredibly small. They would be so small that and so fast that we'd probably never be able to observe them directly. Thank goodness, says Caleb. Europe imagines shrinking yourself down to very small and standing next to an equally small chair. At one point, the chair would be 100 steps away from you and an incredibly short time thereafter and would stand right next to it. And your body would be constantly growing and shrinking as well. Overall, as time passed, you would get further and further away from each other's chair. Wang and Ura calculate that because of the bounces that occur when a point in space which is contracting and expanding, expansion wins out just a little bit. Perhaps I might go with that, because I don't like things where they have things within an atom, which are, it's actually quite a long time for light to transverse that.
Occasionally, but it's well enough that you make angel time. This is the medieval concepts going in.
It's a bit like a child on a swing. If they pump their legs backward and forward just right, their swings get higher and higher. In the case of vacuum energy, acts as a pump, and the height of the swing and the size of the micro universe as grows slightly with each oscillation between the small and large. Well, I think it has to be something like that. You know, that every, that you don't get some space not expanding as much. Now, the result is that these micro-universes expand and contract, the universe as a whole expands. On a human scale, the average fluctuations end up with the universe as we see it, uniformly accelerating out with the fluctuations roll unseen beneath the surface and the vacuum catastrophe is prevented. There are problems with the model, admits Yuha. One at the moment is the tiny expansion and contraction is the moment between those. It isn't clear what happens when you squeeze a small volume of space into a singularity. And we don't yet know how it would square with the general theory of relativity, which it must if it is correct. At this stage, the idea is speculative, based on layers of assumptions and mathematics rather than observations. A number of physicists contacted by New Scientist declined to comment on the work, but Ura thinks he will have to start tackling the vacuum catastrophe somehow. Quote, before we had, you can imagine that. Just, you know, New Scientist phone you up and you say, do you want to be associated with a completely whack idea? Before, what one had was a really hard problem with no idea how to solve it. It says, Unra. Quote, here it is explained by this mechanism, and we now have a bunch of mathematical difficulties that we have to solve. But at least we have a well-defined mathematical problem to look at. Wow. Whatever it actually solves, the cosmological constant problem or not, what is still a hope rather than something that's been demonstrated, says Carlet. But the standard arguments lead to something that's obviously wrong. It's time to take a serious non-standard arguments like this one, he says. I would agree with that. I sort of would agree with certain aspects of that. This is by Adam Vaughan. Our aging population could make it even harder to limit climate change, because I don't think old people really care. Average age is rising around the world, i.e. the number of babies being born is slowing down. How you get the average age growing up. So I think we reach peak baby in 2000, and so our occupancy of the planet is because we're keeping people alive longer. Holstein Ehret of the Harvard University and Emil Zeni of Max Planck's Institute of Democratic Research in Germany have found that energy use rises as we get older, and not just because we tend to get wealthier. A growing population could mean a greater proportion of society with higher energy use, their study suggests. They combined 2 decades of worth of data from thousands of US households and used this double model to reveal how the energy use had varied from 17 groups between 87 and 2009. They found that, on average, children's energy consumption climbs as they grow up, before dipping slightly when they leave home. Consumption then rises again when people hit their 30s, and before briefly dropping before, after 30, 55, then beginning to climb again. A graph would really help there, mate. The study controlled factors such as income, local climate, age, type and size of person's home, or size and type of person. The increase in energy used at various points of our lifetime seemed to be down to lifestyle and how our need changes as we age. Why does demand surge so much more in our 30s? We need more of everything, more space, more TV, cheap fridges, accessory. They found that in the warm parts of the US, energy use intensifies in people over 65 for a little result of increased use of air conditioning. This suggests there is a feedback effect and climate change and an aging population which will only make matters worse. That makes me really want to reach inside of me that as you get old, you use more greenhouse effects, which actually means you get older, I suppose. Heat wave have become more common in the US in recent years, and expected to become more frequent during global warming. Older people using more electrical engineering energy to keep cool as temperature rise could add to the emissions and hence drive the warming until our energy supply becomes entirely fossil fuel free. This confluence of population aging and climate change on the energy demand is really important to start thinking about. Benjamin Sovoloku at the University of Sussex, UK, says the work shows the importance of demographics when it comes to cutting carbon emissions. Most modelling of climate change mitigation assumes people's energy consumption either stays the same or only changes by a small amount over time. Quote, this study directly challenges the entire body of research by forcing it to grapple with the sheer temporality and complexity of consumption of energy, says Civical. Households do not behave in ways easy to predict or comprehend, although they are predicting them and they are comprehending them. Catherine Mitchell, University of Exeter, UK, says the research could have important ramifications for policymakers. Quote, what the paper says is that there's a lot of work about how buildings we use energy, but probably not enough about how people in them use the energy. Well, that's a lovely thing. Cameras can technology and John Cartwright. Cameras can sense what may be lurking around the corner. This is the shadow effect, and that's really interesting. Seeing what's out of sight has turned in a new corner. Digital cameras can take an image of an object hidden around the edge of a wall, or get a few pixels of it, which would help autonomous cars detect hazards and blind spots and hunt for little refugees hiding out of the place. In principle, any vertical edge, such as the corner of a wall, can influence the subtle pattern of light coming from objects out of sight. These patterns appear on the ground when they're seen revealing the semblance of what is hidden. Though too faint to be noticed by the human eye, they can be enhanced and interpreted by an imaging algorithm. I think this is a job for artificial intelligence myself, where you start, you see something and you've got, it's really important. You see something and you start to put artificial things behind the wall to see how that light would go. Get rid of these conditions and you're essentially left with an equation which has three variables and two unknowns, which is originally unsolvable, says Vera Goya of the Boston University in Massachusetts. Yet he and his colleagues have solved it with an algorithm that uses the fact that such light patterns tend to fade as they get closer to the wall. It makes it, it seeks the most plausible object that could produce the effect, which is what basically I said, you put different objects in there. We can work out in one snapshot, says Goyle, whose pictures of a blue cylinder taken from around a black screen represented at the International Conference of Computational Photography in Japan last week. Instant analysis of light patterns on roads could help autonomous vehicles react to dangers more rapidly. Oh, wank home. Goyle's images are currently only one-dimensional, mere lines of varying colours and intensity, but the team is working on two, three-dimensional imaging. I have to really question that. Let's try to turn this page. What's two together? Okay. Well, there you go, Pluto. Lear Crane. Underground oceans stay warm in frosty Pluto. Well, that's a bit of a problem, because Pluto is not any tidal forces to speak of. Lear Crane, so that's generally the tidal force squishing, basically, friction heating things. Okay, Lear Crane. Pluto seems to be hiding liquid ocean under its icy surface. Why it hasn't frozen is a mystery. And now it seems that gas trapped in the base of the ice may keep it warm. Well, this could be a source of heat. Yeah, ultimately it will freeze down to absolute, you know, to 2 degrees Kelvin or whatever it is. Crates on Pluto's icy surface that seem to come from substances, water partially freezing and expanding to the point presence and an ocean beneath the ice. Put to the presence. But unlike other bodies in the solar system, though thought to have such an ocean, such as the icy moons of Europa and Eclidus, Pluto isn't warmed by gravitational pull of a larger nearby object, meaning its ocean should be frozen. Instead, Pluto's ocean must be kept liquid by the small amount of heat produced by the decay of radioactive elements inside the rocky core. But how? Francis Nemo, so it must be great insulated then. The heat must build up, so it's got high temperature. Francis Nemo at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and his colleagues suggested that a layer of gas hydrate between the ocean and the icy surface would do the trick. Frozen water, gas hydrates when gas molecules are trapped between frozen water molecules. It's a little boxcoat stage for keeping gas atoms in, but obviously you've got to get, you know, different gases hydrate differently. I think methane's the main one we're worried about. Okay. Gas hydrates are much better ice insulated than water, so the researchers calculated this layer could keep the ocean liquid maintained and maintain the icy shell. It also explains why Pluto's tenuous atmosphere has lots of nitrogen but almost no methane, which is much easier than methane to get caught in gas hydrate. US by Chelsea White. US abortion rights under threat. Extreme new laws in Alabama and other states would ultimately overturn the Roe versus Wade reports. Yeah, it's pretty sneaky. Roe versus Wade was in the 70s, I think. The most restrictive abortion bill in any US state has just been signed into state law, outlawing abortions in Alabama at any stage of pregnancy. Oh yeah, I suppose. The law will take effect in 6 months and includes criminal penalties for doctors who perform or attempt abortions. With a sentence after 99 years in prison. You can well imagine that they wouldn't have the death sentence for it, would you? I suppose it would. There are exemptions for cases where life is the mother and the fetus, or fetus is threatened, but none of the cases of incest or rape. Surely, the life of the fetus is threatened, okay, we're going to kill it. I don't quite understand that one. The latest in a slew of state bills that have passed this year aiming to reduce abortion rates in Georgia, Ohio, Kentucky, and Mississippi. Some have swiftly struck down by state courts as unconstitutional. Others have set to take off over the next 7 months. Some may be appealed to the Supreme Court, where the verdict of the court could overturn 50 years of abortion protections. Georgia recently banned all abortions after a heartbeat can be detected, usually about 6 weeks after conception, when many women are still unaware they are pregnant. Georgia's law recognizes fetuses as a person, which abortion could be considered murder. However, it leaves open the question of who would be penalized for the abortion, the person receiving it or the doctor performing it. The American Civil Liberties Union has said it will file a lawsuit to stop these bills moving forward. On the 15th of May, it entered such a legal battle with the state of Ohio, which similarly will take effect in July if it is struck down by the court. The coming legal battle is precisely the point of these bills, which is unconstitutional by design. Terry Comas, the Alabama representative who sponsored the state's latest abortion bill, says its purpose is to challenge the federal law that protects the rights of abortion. Alabama Senator Clyde Cambis says the IVF clinics that discard eggs wouldn't face criminal charges under the new law because the eggs and labs are not. The egg in the lab is not in a woman. In 2019 has become a year where the anti-abortion politicians have fully admitted that their ultimate agenda is banning abortion outright, says Liz Nash of the Guttmacher Institute and the US Research Organization in a statement. Quote, all the various paths lead to the same goal, advancing abortion restrictions in the US Supreme Court in hopes of increasing conservative court will undermine and overrun the Roe versus Wade, she says. So this is what you really get. You can see why the Yanks are so concerned about that real sleaze bag. Roe versus Wade is a 73 Supreme Court ruling that protects a woman's right for abortion before the fetus can survive on its own. Support for the ruling hit an all-time high in 2018. According to the NBC poll, 71% of people in the US can say it shouldn't be overturned. I think you get something into the 90s. To overturn Roe versus Wade, a state law that contradicts it can be appealed until it reaches the Supreme Court, where the justices would decide whether or not to reverse the precedent set in the 1970s. Though the court has long been reticent to reverse major rulings, a new conservative lineup of justices in the US by the President Donald Trump may make it possible. Thank you, Trump. One justice has already raised a warning that it could happen. In a recent decision overturning a 40-year-old precedent California tax law, Justice Stephen Baer alluded to the 1992 case upholding Roe versus Wade and Roe. Today's decision can only cause one to wonder which case the court will overrule next. Yeah. I don't know. They seem... It's not the same sort of fear. It's just things are much more calmer in Australia. Okay, innovative chimpanzees. Michael Marshall. Aping others may not be as that important for tool use after all. Chimps, and it's pretty interesting, these chimp studies are like the lobotomy, where they did lobotomies on chimps, did the first study, said that they're calm, then they went off doing lobotomies, and then they said, oh, no, they're more aggressive, I'm sorry. But they, no one paid attention. Chimps have spontaneously figured out how to use a stick to mash a potato, and finally could prompt the rethink for how tool use develops in prior societies. While chimpanzees in Guinea climb to palm trees to eat the tree's hearts, which look like white asparagus, they use sticks to smash the hearts before eating them. Like cooks using pestles and mortars, chimps elsewhere don't do this, suggesting the behaviour is cultural, and that the Guinea chimps picked it up by copying each other. However, Claude Ten at the University of Tübingen, so that's where Hegel was in Germany, is skeptical about copying. Many studies have demonstrated copying among chimps by showing them how to get food from a puzzle box and seeing if they can do it. Tennis says that studies are flawed because the chimps may simply be grasping how such boxes work and then figuring out how to open them for themselves. To see whether chimps can work out such tricks on their own, Tina and his colleagues Esther Barnett studied semi-wild chimp. How can you have semi-wild chimp at the Chimpanzee Wildlife Orphanage in Zambia? That's why it's an orphanage. The chimps have never seen stick pounding. Bandy and Tenny gave the potatoes, and they had boiled for just 3 minutes. Long enough to be edible, but still hard to eat. In 3 out of 4 groups, one chimp collected a stick to use it to smash the potato. They built these kinds of behaviours on their own from scratch, says Tenny. In a separate study involving Tenny captive chimps, figured out, well, yeah, it's just that I think I'm a bit dubious about everything you're saying. Gyms find it really, I think there's a greater thing that they will reinvent if the technology is there. It's sort of like me coming up with ideas based on existing technologies. Gyms find it easy to reinvent certain behaviours, says Kevin Lev of Arizona State University. Gyms he studies in Uganda rarely use tools to get food. But a few years ago, there was a period when there was lots of insects living in fallen logs. The chimps quickly started using sticks to extract them. It looked just like insight, he says. They weren't there for 20 minutes trying out. Just boom, and there's a log, there's a stick, pick it up, and there you go. However, Andre Witten of the University of St. Andrews, UK, says potato tests could have been much easier to master than chimp climbing a spiky palm tree and pounding its heart. If so, the wild behaviour may arise rarely and only spread by copying. Tin and his colleagues findings may help explain why our hominid ancestors kept making the same tools for millions of years. Like chimps, they might have repeatedly reinvented certain tools, but struggling to learn improvements from others. Now that is interesting. I would... Gee, that's two things. That they're either dumb or forced to be dumb. Or I think two things that came across in terms of people do it, and sort of the stupid thing is just to... No, I think my thing... So we've had tools for over 2 million years, so that's way before modern humans. And the tools have remained largely the same, and what's the big thing is whether they make one rock one tool or one rock many tools. My sort of generalised feeling is it must be obviously at the start stupidity, but then sort of this. I mean, that I think they were probably, let's be fair, they were solving a whole heap of other problems. So once you've got, it's like anything, once you know how to have a mobile phone, you don't adopt new phones and stuff like that. Cultural variation would lead to rapid improvements only becoming probably in the last few 100,000 years, perhaps because our species was better at imitation than other hominids. I would say so. Okay, by David Hamling, it's China's new material could create the fastest ever planes. Fastest ever. Okay, 34 seconds. Planes that fly at hypersonic speeds. Sorry, it's a big wind here. It's going to be freeze your bits off soon. Planes that fly at hypersonic speeds may now be possible if reports about the new material are correct. The substance was made in China and seemingly withstand very high temperatures over prolonged periods. Hypersonic flight is travelling at more than 5 times the speed of sound. No vehicles can do this in our atmosphere for more than a few minutes because of the high temperature caused by the friction. But teams that examine universe in China tested the design for a hypersonic vehicle last month, which they say reached an altitude of 26 kilometres, although it didn't use the new material. According to China's Global Times newspaper, the material can withstand 3,000 degrees for hours. So it should easily be able to. Can you imagine that? You know, it's not only going that, it's, you can imagine having a bit of a shudder as well, and a bit of lifetime problems, but the material was created in 2012, and is now in production for aviation, space, and defense users, says Fan Jing, Central South University of China, to the newspaper. Fan hasn't revealed many of the details, but she works on a highly performance tungsten that's previously followed by. Tungsten is pretty heavy as well. It is possible, in principle, to... Oh, sorry, mate. to withstand 3,000 degrees, says Russell Gothel of the University of Sheffield. Well, it has to be tungsten. The tungsten composite seems a logical choice, but it's difficult to find a combination of materials that works, says Zach Fang of the University of Utah. A recently launched project by the US military research agency DAPRA is looking for materials able to withstand 2,200 degrees for its own. The absence of hard details in scientific papers is difficult to determine whether the new material breakthrough is a breakthrough at this point. It's more hype than real, says Fang. Which, yeah, I think that might be a wise thing to say with this hype and why you're publishing hype. But, you know, in this, like, it'd be nice if you had a page, the greatest hype going through. Okay, Chomping Carbon by Don Liu. Turning CO2 into animal feed could cut agriculture's climate impact. Carbon captured from industry could be channeled into food chain, a process that might help reduce the emissions from agriculture. A UK-based company, Deep Branch Biotechnology, has recently finished testing the method for turning carbon dioxide into animal feed. It's now teaming up with two CO2 emitters, one that generates electricity and one that produces cement, for trials over 18 months. Okay, we'll imagine that. In which it will convert the gas into 100 kilograms of protein to be fed to fish and livestock. We don't know the efficiency of this. The firm's method relies on edible strain of bacteria that consumes CO2. Well, it's still got to have energy. You know, it can't just... Oh, it's got to have something higher energy. Just bacteria grow and reproduce and when fed gas and can regulate harvest. And regularly harvest while maintaining the colony. What's dried out, around 70% of the remaining material is protein. So to be protein, it's got to have nitrates in it. If you imagine the fossil cost of nitrates. Basic building blocks of life, says Peter Rowe at the Deep Branch. Around a third of all cropland is now used for animal feed, according to the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. Around 70% of all fish caught globally are turned into feed for commercial fisheries, found in an analysis of the UK Sea Fish Industry Authority. The hope is that Deep Branch's technology can be used to reduce these numbers to provide extra incentive for CO2 to be captured into the atmosphere. The Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change has said that its carbon capture will be necessary to limit the carbon growth to 1.5 degrees. Quote, every little bit helps, says Ron Howdy of the University of Idaho. However, he's skeptical that this will be a large enough scale perfect global emissions, you bet. Especially it's got to not produce any emissions and make it. It looks absolutely yum what they're doing here. This is a photograph. Deep Branch plans to build a large production facility in 2021 so it can produce several tons of protein per year. Alright, given that a household puts out several tons of carbon dioxide. The idea of using bacteria to make protein for animal feed have been around since the 1970s, but it's only recently became economically viable. What changed is that fish meal, the power to obtain from million dry and drying fish parts, has become more expensive. This has traditionally been used as a food source for fisheries, but Russia has failed to keep up with the pace of growing human demand for fish. Other firms are also exploring similar approaches to Deep Branch, such as Calista in the US and Ubeno in Denmark. Both companies use bacteria to produce protein to feed fish. However, rather than CO2, the microbes they use consume another greenhouse gas, methane. You can imagine that it's a bit more hydrogen. Hello, sweetie. Are you going for a walk now? Wahani? I'm just here. This podcasting. I'll finish this. Okay. Beyond animal feed, companies such as Climeworks in Switzerland use CO2 from the atmosphere to carbonate beer and soft drinks, and as dry ice for freezing food. They also fill greenhouses with the gas to boost the plant photosynthesis and therefore growth.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.